I am a California state prosecutor turned fertility fairy godmother. We're in 1 to 5 million. We have our sights set on 10. I think a wise entrepreneur has a very even spread of digital presence, content marketing, and also classic door knocking and talking to people, getting back to having relationships.
This is the Content Capitalists Podcast. We talk to business owners who've used video to grow their businesses to $1 million a year or more. How they did it, what worked, what didn't. Welcome to the Content Capitalists with your host, Ken Okazaki.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Content Capitalist Podcast. This is a podcast where I have conversations with people who are doing at least $1 million a year in their business and many times more. Now, today I've got someone with me from the Woodlands. Now, if you don't know exactly where the Woodlands are, I didn't either until just a second ago when it was explained to me. And from the Woodlands, we have Roseanne Austin. Roseanne, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
Awesome. You know, if you're listening to the podcast, I really do encourage you, go down to the show notes. There's going to be a link to watch us on YouTube because you've got to see Roseanne. She's like fully branded with her hair, the background being on point, the glasses, the lipstick. Like, you're really on point in so many different ways. And I hope that if you're listening, you'd at least come peek at what she's looking like here on the YouTube show. But before we jump into just all the aesthetics that are going really well for her, Roseanne, would you mind just giving us a brief overview? What is your business? How much is it making on a yearly basis? And what kind of people are you helping?
So I am a California state prosecutor turned fertility fairy godmother, Ken. So I help women who are struggling with fertility finally get and stay pregnant with the piece of the fertility puzzle that's often missed, and that's mindset. So the first thing that people do when they're struggling with fertility is they think it's their diet. They think it's their lifestyle, or they run to a doctor. But the piece that is often overlooked is, what are they thinking about? How are they showing up in the world? How are they making decisions? And this whole business was formed from my own personal experience. So my husband and I struggled to conceive for 7 years. And we had spent hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to get treatment, trying to figure out what was wrong with us. But we were not at all looking at the way that we were thinking. We just thought that we were going to hand ourselves over to doctors and they were going to fix it all. But we weren't looking at our stress levels. We weren't looking at anything. And he's a retired police officer. I'm a former prosecutor. We led very stressful lives, and we just kind of figured that that didn't matter. But once I started looking at the mindset piece, and I started to think about this kind of like a trial attorney, like, what are the pieces that are missing from my whole health? That's when I realized, the piece that is missing is the way that I'm thinking about myself, my possibilities, my prospects. And when I put that piece of the fertility puzzle in place, I beat the odds. We ended up having our son naturally when I was almost 44, despite being told repeatedly that we were beyond medical help. So once this all formed, I decided that I was going to leave my work as a prosecutor and begin sharing this with other women so that they too could overcome any struggle they were having with fertility. And, you know, this business started at my dining room table. There was barely anything happening. I just knew that I had a dream that I wanted to share it. And then over the years, through consistently putting out great content, over time, this really started to snowball and become something that was changing lives. Like, I went from hoping to help somebody to now serving women on 6 of 7 continents. And so started super small, and we have consistently crossed 7 figures over the past few years. And it's just been incredible.
I'm going to point out one thing that immediately got my attention. You said you were 44 when you had your child, right?
Yeah.
And first of all, I'm like, wow, I thought you were like mid or late 30s. And then you start talking about as if it's a long time ago. I mean, look at you. You're like I didn't think you were 40 yet. When you came on, I was just like, oh, here's a young one. This is literally what came on in my mind. And I'm not stupid enough to ask what your age is, but I'll just say you don't look 44 yet.
Oh, well, you can ask all day. I'm proud of it. I'm proud that I just turned 49. And
wow.
This is the power of mindset, because I don't think of myself as old or over the hill. And that was actually part of the problem. That's part of the problem that I solve with women. You know, when we were trying to conceive our son, I was over 35 and I thought, oh man, this is going to be hard. You know, I'm over the hill. There's no help for me. Why did I have to pursue a career as a prosecutor? Why didn't I just have babies when I was in my 20s? Which is completely warped and completely ridiculous. And part of the programming that we get as women is that you only have this finite period of time. But Ken, I've helped women from ages 28 to 52
wow.
get pregnant.
52.
In fact, my 52-year-old client, well, technically she's 53 now. She just sent me her pregnancy shoot photos. And it's incredible. Like, women are changing the conversation about what's possible, the way that we look at ourselves within the context of fertility. And that's why I do the work that I do. When I figured this out for myself, I had to share it with any woman who would be willing to listen. And so that's how we find ourselves here.
Amazing. And now I can see why with that message, that mindset, that there's going to be a lot of people attracted to your message. Give us some context on right now. Like, how much is your business making? Is it like in the 2-3 or like, is it 10 million and above, 1 to 5 million, somewhere around that range?
So we're in 1 to 5 million and we have our sights set on 10.
Okay. Yeah. It's 10. That's the thing about us entrepreneurs is, you know, in the beginning, we'd never dream of making $1 million. Right. So we get to 100,000 and we're happy, but we got to add a zero. Right. And then every time, you know, we hit that target, it's just like, why not add another zero? And then we feel like that same feeling we were 10 years ago or whenever it was we started. So that's, I'm with you there. Like, as soon as I hit a million, I'm just like, well, how do we get to 10? And then when I'm at 10, I know for a fact I'm going to say, how do we get to 100? And it's just going to keep happening. Second thing I wanted to say is mindset. Mindset is ridiculously important, but I never thought of it as something that would apply to fertility. I thought that was a biological thing more than a mindset thing. Could you talk to me about how mindset in being a trial lawyer translates over to fertility? Like, it doesn't make sense right now, and I'm dying to hear how that connection works.
Well, you know, thoughts, beliefs, actions, results, right? It's logical and linear. It's linear in life, but it's also linear in biology. More and more information is coming out about the mind-body connection. And I was really inspired when I was on my own fertility journey. I started reading about this. This is well known. We know this at a very basic level when it comes to placebo effect. Right? When you're doing clinical trials on medications, there will be a portion of that study that will be given a placebo. And that's like the most basic place to start when understanding the mind-body connection. When you believe something is going to work for you and you really get into it, and it's like there's a switch that gets flipped within you. And when you have that belief, you'll start taking different actions. Right? We also see this in fairly accessible subjects like weight loss and things like that. Like, if you don't believe you can actually be thin and healthy, you won't do the things that are going to be required for you to be thin and healthy. So one of the ways that I see, because I work with women typically 35 and over who are professionals, I coach physicians, lawyers, nurses, engineers, scientists of all kinds, from truly all over the world, from New Zealand, Australia, Canada, UK, you name it. And one of the things that we see consistently is, as women, we are like, well, we can't possibly have it all. We can't have a thriving career and love and a family. We get into this siloed thought that we can't have it all. So we think that, well, if I go for it, it's too much. I'm greedy. And so if you carry that limiting belief that you can't have it all, regardless of how committed you are, you won't do those things. You won't do the things to help yourself be successful, and you'll probably give up sooner than you quote unquote should. And I see this, Ken, day in and day out. Mindset is everything. You know, even if you went to a fertility doctor that said, you've got a 10% chance of conceiving, if you're serious about being a mom, you're going to focus on that 10% about how you can versus the 90% that says you can't, right? It's all about, just like in entrepreneurship, like, I don't care how many people are telling me no. What I care about is the one person that will tell me yes, because that is my entry point. That is the way that I'm going to make it happen. And the same is true with fertility, right? If you buy into the idea that you're old, well, you will be. And there's more and more evidence of this. It has moved from the realm of the woo-woo into the factual. And there's loads of anecdotal evidence. And this is kind of hard to track in studies because it's, you know, people are dynamic. And so there aren't a lot of randomized, you know, trials on things like this. But everyone knows somebody who beat the odds based on their attitude, the way they showed up, how they problem solved. It's like winning on the fertility journey is a lot like winning in business. You have to think on your feet and not be confined by statistics.
Wow. I want to share something that, first of all, two things come to mind as you're talking. Do you ever watch that TV show? I believe it's on Netflix. It's called Master of None.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you remember when that woman was trying to get pregnant? With the fertility, and the first time she failed, and then she goes back again to the fertility doctor and she says, are you a bad bitch? And the lady's just like, what? What are you talking? Like, she couldn't say the words. But when her mindset shifted, like, hey, we're bad bitches and we're going to get this done together, and that attitude, and of course, it's just TV drama. But as you're talking, this just kept coming back to me. The first time failed. And it's like ridiculous how many injections she was giving herself, like the procedure. I didn't know how difficult that was. And, you know, the interruptions to her work and everything. But that mindset shift was like the turning point. And then from then on in that show where everybody's rooting for her, like, it's going to work, right? But you could see that shift that happened. So as you're talking, it just kept running through my mind. Now, here's the other thing. I have never talked about this publicly, but a lot of people do know I have 6 kids, right? When I say I, that means me and my wife. She's the one that did the hard work. But and we never did have to take fertility. But here's something that a lot of people said was just like, hey, something you shouldn't do, was the first child she had, my wife, was a cesarean section birth. And there was so many people saying, oh, once you have a cesarean, then you shouldn't have another one. That's dangerous. Or maybe 2 is the most, right? And this was back in the early 2000s, you know, so you can figure out how old I am now. But what happened was we actually talked to tons of doctors, and a lot of them said, we said, why can't we have more? Or is it really dangerous? And they had zero statistical evidence or even any official advisory. They just said, what it boiled down to is we've never done it, so we're not sure. Like they didn't have the confidence in themselves. So we kept going, and now we have 6 children together, all cesarean birth. Now, my wife, to be fair, she's the one whose body had to go through that process. And I was trying to be as supportive as possible. But there was that when the doctors admitted that there's zero evidence proving that or even suggesting that's dangerous to have more, it's just that they had never done it. It was their lack of confidence they're projecting on us, suggesting that we shouldn't do it. And that's when I kind of realized, and this was when I was in my 20s at the time, I realized, so doctors really, when they say something, a lot of times it's just their confidence, their gut that they're talking through, not statistical or medical science that's talking. And that kind of spoke to me as you were sharing what you're talking about the placebo effect and things like that. They're not gods, but sometimes we put them on a pedestal as if they are God because they have a higher degree than us in the category, which we should respect. But come on, like let's have a conversation. It's both ways. Let's ask some real questions too, right?
Well, exactly that. I mean, I love the point that you're making because, like, I don't particularly care about the statistics, and I encourage my ladies to take statistics for what they are. That was one piece of information, and it probably didn't include you. They don't know you, right? And I agree with you. It's funny, Dr. Bernie Siegel, New York Times bestselling author, beloved cancer doctor, surgeon, he wrote the foreword to my first book, Am I the Reason I'm Not Getting Pregnant? The Fearlessly Fertile Method for Clearing the Blocks Between You and Your Baby.
Is that the one behind you over your left shoulder?
Yeah, yeah. And so right there, that pink one right there. And so he spoke about that, you know, he actually said MD does not stand for medical deity. We are human beings.
Good one.
Yeah. And he said, we're human beings. It is a practice of medicine, just like I practice law. It is an evolving situation and science is evolving constantly. So the idea that it is fixed in stone or that the statistics are anything other than a data point, you know, why hand over your dreams and why hand over your desire for a family, and bless you for having six kids. That's wonderful. And I'm so glad that you guys didn't buy into the idea that that you couldn't do more. I love that. It says a lot about you that you didn't just have one more. You had a bunch of them. And so that's probably also why you're an excellent
entrepreneur. We found some very supportive doctors, at the end.
Yeah.
You just said something that stuck with me. You said, MD does not stand for medical deity. I'll bet that if you made that into a t-shirt, people would buy that up. Like imagine this, when your clients come onto your program, you ship them a t-shirt that says that. So when they go in for the medical check, they're wearing that. And the doctor's this one's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, Ken, because I coach so many physicians. I've coached.
Oh, okay. That's so cool.
Dozens and dozens of physicians.
And these are physicians who want to have babies, or physicians who want to? Okay, got it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've coached physicians in 19 different specialties. So what that obviously says is the smart physicians realize that there's more that is happening when it comes to fertility than just taking a pill or doing a treatment. The human body is wildly nuanced. There's so many different things that come into it. And the common denominator is you. So how you show up and your attitude towards things is a critical piece. It's like this X factor, right? You can bring a sperm and an egg together, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a healthy, happy 40-week pregnancy. There's this other part of us, this magical aspect of us as human beings that is not quantifiable, that I think really does make the difference between somebody's success and failure, just like in business.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Roseanne, one thing I have to do here is talk a bit about your origin story. A lot of people, what happens is, and this happened to me as well, before I got into business for myself, I'd see someone making $1 million a year and I'd say, that sounds great, but that's not me. I can't do that, right? And now here I am. But what I want to do is bridge the gap from when you went from your, I assume it was a corporate job, and how you took that leap of faith, and how did you make your first $1, $100, $1,000, all the way to $1 million+, right? Tell me about your previous job. Were you recruited right out of college? How did you land into that?
Well, what was interesting is I had a bunch of different jobs before I went to law school. I always knew I wanted to be a lawyer, and I decided that I wanted to take a little bit of time off, try a few things. So I did certain marketing jobs, in sales, things like that. And then when I decided that I was going to buckle down and go to law school, I did that. And
did you fund yourself?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
And I'm glad that I did that, because the kind of maturity that comes from actually earning money and understanding what's happening to it really prepared me for business later. So what happened was, when I got through law school, part of my extracurricular activities was working for the DA's office, the district attorney's office. And I realized, wow, I not only am I a true crime buff, but I love being in the courtroom. So I had the opportunity to be a research assistant at a DA's office in Sacramento, California. And I started trying traffic ticket cases. Who knew that you could actually have a trial over a traffic ticket?
I've seen some of them on YouTube, right? Where
I'm sure.
Kind of a cute little thing. But it's usually just the judge and the defendant. There's not usually a lawyer involved.
There's no jury. Yeah. Well, right? And at the time, I was not technically a lawyer. I was still a law student, but I was trying these cases representing the people of the state of California. And it was great because that's when I realized that being a trial attorney, being in the ring, being a gladiator is what I wanted to do. And so when I finished law school, I was hired very quickly by the Sonoma County DA's office in Northern California. And that's where I began my career as a prosecutor. So I started by prosecuting misdemeanor cases, trespassing, like drunk in public, all kinds of crazy, you know, DUI, all the unsexy stuff. And very quickly, because I had so much trial experience before going into the DA's office, I began getting bigger and bigger assignments in the DA's office. So I did narcotics, I did felony preliminary hearings, all kinds of, you know, auto theft, and so all these things. And then I was handpicked to be part of the sexual assault prosecution unit. And that's really where I hit my stride as a prosecutor. And it was also during that time that my husband and I were trying to conceive. So insanely busy. I tried, I think it was 3 life cases in 13 months. I was one of the most active trial attorneys in our office. And so I was prosecuting adult and child sexual assaults. I also tried a homicide case, second chair. So it was like living Law and Order is really what it was. A little bit less sexy, and things don't always wrap up in an hour. But it was, and it, you know, it you there is a toll that starts to be taken on the body, like energetically, you take on a lot of things. And I prosecuted a lot of cases involving children. So I'd have to go to forensic interviews, I'd have to go to, you know, sexual assault exams. I mean, so there was this thing that started happening to me. It's very easy to start wearing that kind of stress. I mean, the work was incredibly rewarding, but it was also, there was a price to pay. And so even though I was extremely good at what I was doing, I was starting to having to balance this desire to have a child with the commitment that I had to my community. So there was like this intense pressure on me at all times. And that's when our fertility treatments just kept failing and failing. My husband was a police officer at the time. So we were both in the business of fighting crime. And there was a huge toll on him as well. And so when we started piling up all these failures, that's when I really had to look. What was the piece that was missing? What needed to be different? My diet, Ken, was pristine. We were sparing no expense on fertility.
Tell me a bit about expense. How much is one of these things? And I only know what I saw on TV and some dramas. Like if one cycle is several months, right?
It depends on the protocol they put you on, but it could be about 6 weeks. So we were spending about $25,000 a pop.
And how many,
for medications,
how many pops did you do?
You know, we did a lot, Ken. I can't even remember.
So over 6 figures you spent on fertility?
Oh, easily. Easily. And that doesn't that doesn't even include the trips to celebrity acupuncturists, faith healers, psychics, like all of the, I mean, because trying to conceive becomes a lifestyle because you're desperate. And at that point in my life, I was like, I am used to accomplishing anything I put my mind to. I don't take no for an answer. You know, I was on the honor roll in law school. Like, I am a producer, Ken. Like, this is what I do is achieve. And this is the one thing I couldn't control. And this was the most heartbreaking thing about it. I mean, it brought me to my knees. And it was insanely humbling because I thought that if I wanted to be successful on my fertility journey, all I had to do was work harder. But it's actually the opposite. And I learned that the hard way. And so that's when I really took this on board, I got pregnant for the first time with our last embryo, you know, and it was the last. Now, I didn't carry that pregnancy to term, but what it taught me was I needed to be different Because after so many years of failure, the one thing that's different is me, and I finally get pregnant. And all that did was light the fire within me. I was like, oh yeah. You know, because some people turn miscarriage into a belief system that it's not going to happen for them. I did the opposite. I said, okay, all right. I finally got a yes. I finally got a yes. Now, I didn't take that, you know, I didn't carry that baby to term. But what I knew was, now I can see what happens when I'm different. And I said, man, I got to share this with other women. I have to do this. And so that's when I left my work as a prosecutor. And I started really simply with blogging. I was taking DUI cases just to make money. And I started a blog. I started writing content and all of this stuff and beginning to put it out there. And the whole time, Ken, look, I was a civil servant. The idea of making $1 million seemed impossible.
Touching on that, I want to expand on that. So you made this transition, you made a decision, right? You saw something, you saw proof of concept. You wanted to, you know, go deeper with that.
100%.
What were you making when you're practicing law?
So I was making six figures, low six figures as a government prosecutor. Okay. I mean, and that seemed to me like big money. Ken,
well,
I thought
it is for most people in the world. That's you're the, like, top 20% income or even 10% income in for, as far as
right.
Global
but when
goes.
You
But then but I'm thinking about, like, if you're making six figures, but then you're spending six figures on your fertility, and then your husband's on a, what you said, he's a cop, right? On that they don't make very much money, right?
So he was, like, making six figures at the time as well, because he was,
I guess that's California salaries, right?
Assignment. Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. California always make more, but where we came from, like, I came from a family of civil servants. I didn't grow up in an entrepreneurial household. Like, what I learned as a kid was you go get a job, you go get an education, and you go work for someone, because that was quote unquote security. So at the time, I was like, I wasn't even hoping to make $1 million. What I was hoping was that I would survive and not be homeless. You know, that was that kind of, like, and it makes me, I have so much compassion for that version of myself. She's so cute. She's so sweet. She just wanted to replace her income. And when
hopefully.
Right? And you know what's funny, Ken, is six figures sounds a lot, but I was working 60-hour weeks. And sometimes I was carrying a search warrant. That was back when we had pagers. When somebody needed us to,
You're talking about 90s now, right?
No. This was the 2000s, but here's the deal. Government's about 20 years behind everybody else. So we still had pagers and flip phones. So, you know, sometimes I would take special assignments to make an extra $3 an hour to review search warrants. I mean, that's the lack and scarcity mindset that I was raised with. Was that you had to scrape for every tiny, teeny little dime, and you had to work your fingers to the bone. So even though six figures sounded like a lot, when you're working 60, 70-hour weeks, sometimes not sleeping because you're waking up in the middle of the night to go out to a call, or to a child sexual assault happens, so there's a forensic interview, you know, you're making like 4 cents an hour. So it sounds sexy, but it's not. It's really not. You're probably making minimum wage some weeks.
Yeah. Did you do that thing? And I remember when I started shifting from having a job to starting my own business, I started looking for just, like, worst case scenario. Like, what is the cheapest, rattiest house I'd be willing to live in? How much is that going to cost each month? So then I know that as long as I could make, you know, $1,250 a month, then I could pay rent in this shitty place, part of town, in this shitty house. Like, did you do the worst case scenario thing in your mind?
Oh yeah. I figured I would raid my retirement. I could, you know, I could probably continue to take DUI cases or DWI cases, depending on where you're living. You know, I figured worst case scenario, I could do wills and trusts, things like that. So in my career as a lawyer was my backup. But I knew I would never go back to the DA's office. There was no way I was going to go back to that life. It was just too crazy. I figured I would work three jobs at 7-Eleven before I would go back to the DA's office. Like, I loved serving my community. I loved the people that I helped. But that environment was ultimately toxic. And there was no way I was going back to that. So I had to burn the ships. I was like, I'm taking this idea and I'm going to run with it. This is it. And I think the other thing that I want to make sure that I mention, Ken, is this was a calling for me. I remember waking up at like 4:30 in the morning, sitting straight up in bed and telling my husband, this is what I'm going to do.
Wow.
And I didn't know how.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't know how I was going to do it. I didn't feel qualified to do it. But I was like, everything that I have done as an adult and even like my education was preparing me for this moment. And when I look back on this, I've been doing this for 8 years now. And when I look back on where I was when I made that decision and where I am today, it blows my mind. There were so many nights that I would cry, you know, thinking that this is never going to work. I'm going to have to go work at 7-Eleven because I won't go back to the DA's office. All those people that thought that I was going to fail or laughed at me for leaving a cushy government job, they were right, but no way. It's like now making what I made in a year, in a month, happens all the time. Without the toxicity.
Yeah.
And now on my terms, and I've taken, I think the cool part about this, Ken, is I've taken that desire for to serve, and now I've channeled it into something more creative, more entrepreneurial, and really helping women in a different way.
That's beautiful. Now we've gone from the government job, and we're talking about a bit of where you are now. Let's not forget to wade through that dip. Like you said, that there were nights you were crying and things like that. What was going on? How long did it take you to figure out how to make your first dollar? Aside from, you know, like lawyer work, legal stuff. And what was your strategy to get there?
So it was funny because like when I left my work as a prosecutor, when I was taking kind of these ad hoc cases, I went and got my coaching education. I was in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I remember, you know, them saying, well, you could probably charge XYZ an hour as a coach. And I remember thinking that even that sounded like a lot of money. And I told myself, if I just got one body, one warm body, if I could just coach one person, the floodgates would open, right? Like if I could just go out there and do this one, I would have proof of concept, like we were talking about earlier, that somebody would actually pay me to be their coach. And it was so funny because, strangely enough, the first person I coached was a man. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't about...
But you wanted, from the beginning, you knew you wanted to coach about fertility, right?
Yeah.
So how did this happen? Tell me about this.
Yeah, so at this point, I mean, this is the entrepreneurial thing where you're like, okay, I'm going to run with this. I see an opportunity, I'm going to take it because I know as an ethical human being, I could help this person, right? So this opportunity came across my desk that this guy was looking for life coaching. So even though my focus was ultimately on fertility, I knew I could help him with his life because he was asking some of the similar questions that I was asking about career and stuff. So I'm like, you know what? I can help this dude. And it was funny. I don't charge this anymore, not even close, but I was basically begging him to let me coach him. And I was charging him some insanely minuscule amount of money, but it was important to me.
Oh, you have to share that number. Come on.
Oh gosh. I think I was charging him $375 for three sessions. Like okay. It was just outrageous. And this guy had text.
Well, we all start somewhere. I don't think anybody listening, if that number sounds, I think some people listening who haven't gone into professional coaching or maybe who just don't have the confidence, that number might not seem crazy low to them. To us, it does seem crazy low. But I think I really want to dig into reality, and I don't think you should be embarrassed at all. You can look back at it and say, oh, like you said earlier, oh, that poor cute person I used to be, right? Roseanne, well, I love the detail. Thank you so much for sharing the numbers.
Yeah, no, it was great. And I mean, these were 90-minute calls. You know, like I was
90 really, minutes. So yeah, it's like barely just, over $100 for 90
yeah,
minutes.
I mean, okay. I would, you know, but that came from this desire to serve before I realized, you know, there's so much I've learned since then, but you know, I thought keeping him on the phone longer was giving to him, but it was probably the worst thing I could possibly do. So there's so many mindset shifts that I've made since then, but the goal and the intention was to serve at the highest level. And so what happened was, is I was right. After I got one client, getting the second, the third, the fourth, and so on, became so much simpler because I was slowly building the confidence that not only could I help people, but my clients were getting insane results.
And the thing I'm curious about here is, like, when you said that you were practically begging him to become your client, because, you know, we got to start somewhere. I think that there's nothing wrong with that. I've launched a few programs where I did some coaching completely free. And then that's just to test the, just like comedians, you know, they test their content, their lines in these small, you know, gigs. And then the ones that really work, they compile them and then they get paid a whole bunch to do like a, you know, a 90 minute Netflix standup, right?
Right,
that's,
right.
That's that progression. So I see nothing exactly wrong with it at all, personally. Let me ask you something. You said you were a trial lawyer. Let's actually standing in court, talking to the jury, the defense, you know, all that stuff. Did that practice help you in sales? Like, do you feel like those skills carry over into anything you're doing now when you're selling what you do, whether it's your VSLs, whether it's webinars, one-on-one sales calls?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it was about speaking. It was about persuasion. It was about being able to communicate what you do quickly and efficiently. And so that people understand where you're coming from, just without confusion. I help women get pregnant, Ken. Like, so when anyone asks me what I do, I help women get pregnant. That's it, right? To be able to speak precisely and concisely about what I do, just like I would ask the jury, you know, based on the evidence, I'm asking you to find this person guilty. And here's how I've proven this person is guilty, you know, and X, Y, Z. So making a case, Ken. So it's like having a very precise statement of what you do and then building the case about how you can help people who want to be helped.
Yeah. You can build a case about why it's possible for them to get pregnant, like why they should believe it's possible, just like you should believe this person is guilty, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it was great preparation. I mean, everything about being a trial lawyer propelled me forward. And not only that, but it's also helped people understand me and what they're getting into. Because when people hear about coaching, or especially in the fertility world, they think it's going to be woo-woo nonsense. Well, I'm a trial attorney. I still think like a lawyer, even though I've been out of the courtroom for well over 10 years. So, you know, they know that they're getting somebody who has the tenacity to get through law school, who was trusted by the state of California to put criminals away. And I know what I'm talking about because I've also lived it. So it's creating credibility and the ability for people to see that they can trust me, in addition to looking at my client results. So it was really great preparation. And public speaking, most people would rather die than public speaking. Well, that's how I made a living for just about 10 years as a prosecutor. So it was such a great segue into the next calling.
So tell me about how you transitioned from this one-on-one coaching situation with this gentleman who's doing 90 minute sessions with right now. You told me you're making, you know, multiple seven figures a year. What was the biggest, like, I guess if we were to draw a graph, if you saw a jump somewhere, could you identify some of those inflection points that made a really big difference in scaling to where you are now?
Yeah. I mean, and that's what it was, is it really did come down to scaling. And it also came down to me asking a smarter question. And that was, how can I serve women truly at the highest level? And over time, through coaching women one-on-one, which is basically how my business started and how most of us start, there were three things that I realized that women needed in order to make mindset shifts that last on this journey. Because I don't just coach women to help them get pregnant. My objective is that whatever I'm teaching or coaching women through, that they're going to use through a full 40 weeks of healthy, happy pregnancy and later on as mama bear. So one of the things that I realized was women need, as I was saying before, three things. They need structure, they need consistency, and they need community. So when I was asking myself, how can I serve women at a level that is going to truly be revolutionary in their lives, I saw that the one-on-one model was limited not only for me, but for them. it was robbing them of a critical component of that trifecta that I was talking about of a fertility success, the structure, consistency, and community. I wanted these women that I love so dearly to have community because there's so much shame and secrecy around struggling with fertility because, you know, women like me who are lovably type A control freaky professionals don't want anybody to see that we're failing at what we typically consider is a biological basic. And, you know, I was in the courtroom and I would see crackheads coming in with six kids and I felt like shit because I'm like, well, what about me? Like, I'm a good human. I don't do dope. And I could probably pass an FBI background check faster than most people. And I still can't have a baby. Like, there was all this comparison and victimhood. So what I wanted women to have was a safe environment where they can be with other lovably type A control freaky professionals, very A game players that we can come together. They can have a safe place to learn, to be coached, and also to have that community. Because I coach alpha females, Ken, strong, strong women who see crazy shit day in and day out. And it takes an alpha female to hold space for an alpha female. And I wanted to give the women that I serve an opportunity to have space held for them so they can come and not be judged, not feel separate anymore, and to have that kind of community that's going to help them through probably the most trying time in their life. And that's why I scaled. I said, I got to find a way to teach this in a more efficient way, not just for my time, but that's actually going to exponentially impact my clients' results. And it has. That's why we're over seven figures consistently, because what we're doing and the way that my team and I work is, even though this is a group coaching program that women come to with me, that it is high touch. It is extremely high touch. We haven't lost our humanity. And we do small group work because it's just the nature of the game. Like, I don't feel like having 1,000 women at one time in my program is a great model. I have thousands of women who do my self-study programs. But when it comes to being coached by me, I have to admit, Ken, I still like the warm and fuzzy of doing the coaching myself and watching women thrive. But it has not only made the results that my clients get like insane. You know, we're at the time of this recording, we're at 73 pregnancies this year. And that includes the woman that's in her 50s. And those are just the ones we know of, Ken. Not everybody tells me, right? Because this is not about me. This is about them and this is about their success. So I feel very blessed that women come back and tell me, like, I'm pregnant, but I don't expect it because it's not my thing. Their pregnancy is theirs and they get to, you know, they are going to go on their merry way. So those are just the ones we know of.
Wow. Well, and I'll bet that most of the skills you teach them are going to carry on into other parts of their life. Just like the first coaching client you had who just wanted life coaching, right? Because a lot of it is really, you know, how to set your goals, how to behave, how to think, change everything about your life. Now, there is an obligatory thing I got to ask you. What kind of content are you creating? What's your content plan? Because when you want to attract people to a community, the different people have different strategies. Some people do a bunch of paid media, send them to a Facebook group, and then get appointment setters to get them on a call. Some people do it much more organically, and they have like, or you know, there's 100 different strategies. How does, just draw a simple line for me for when people don't know you, to their first contact, to money in the bank, and they're inside your coaching sessions.
So typically women find me through one of the three books that I've written. It's a classic book funnel, basically, is, you know, my book, and most women are going to find me through my book. And so once they read my book, they're going to say, oh, wow, whew, I had no idea this, you know, that this was even a thing, right? So they're getting introduced to that. And we give all kinds of wonderful gifts that, you know, if you read the book, you can download these additional trainings and really get women to whet their appetite and start to think much bigger for themselves and their babies and their families in this process. So that's one avenue. Another avenue that people find me through is my Fearlessly Fertile podcast. And so it's a raw podcast, Ken. So it's very different than the kind of podcast you typically hear on the subject of fertility. 10 years in the courtroom will make you a little salty and a little direct. So the way that I approach podcasting is putting out consistent content every single week. I don't miss a week. I don't care what's going on in my life because my clients and the women that are in this community depend on that. And they want that ongoing thing. So I'm teaching material. I'm encouraging them. I'm creating questions for them to be asking themselves as they live that journey. We also, because so many of my ladies get pregnant, we also have guest experts come on. We also have past clients come on, women who love to share their stories of triumph and how if they did it, other women can too. So it's classic content marketing and really giving women an opportunity to hear something other than just horrifying statistics. They get to see real life stories from women who are telling it in their own words. And so it's been really powerful in that way. So the book, the podcast, and other things like, you know, we do digital media, we do paid traffic, things like that. But we're putting more emphasis these days on real boots on the ground, classic marketing. You know, getting out in front of people and doing events,
like live conferences and stuff.
So putting events together. We're mm-hmm. also boots on the ground talking to practitioners in this space. So, you know, with so much going on in social media and stuff like that, and sometimes people need a break from that. And so, you know, I think a wise entrepreneur has a very even spread of, you know, digital presence, the content marketing, and also classic door knocking and talking to people, getting back to having relationships. Because I think that if the past 2.5/3 years hasn't taught us anything, people still crave that real connection. And I think that's where we're headed as well.
So we've got a healthy mix of a lot of things. You've got your book, which is what we'd call a low ticket item, right? You're leading with value. You just teach stuff for free in your podcast. The book is probably practically free, you know, like 20 or 30 bucks or something, right?
Basically.
That gives people enough knowledge, enough value to realize there's more upstream where that came from. And then do you usually sell your program right after that? Or do you get them on a sales call? Or is it like an automated online system?
Yeah. So what we do is we have multiple entry points. So that we have a suite of self-study programs. So if a woman has never been coached and isn't even quite sure she wants to be coached, you know, the book and the podcast are pretty good segues as to what they're getting into, particularly with me. There's no, like a lot of fertility stuff out there is like a 1980s Summer's Eve ad. You're a dude, so you probably don't know what that is, but it's like old feminine hygiene products and, you know, airy fairy nonsense. We are kind of like a punch in the face when it comes to fertility. So there are self-study programs that we offer, and we also have a call to action in my podcast of, you know, have an interview, because you can only get into my live coaching programs through an interview. It's really important to us that we're very selective with who we invite into our coaching programs, not just because we want to make sure it's a good fit as part of being an ethical operation, but also I need to really dig who I'm coaching, because I get excited as a coach to see women thrive. And so there has to be a good fit for them. But even more importantly, it has to be a good fit for me.
Yeah, totally makes sense. And I really love the positioning you put there. You're interviewing them to see if they qualify to enter. Kind of like how Harvard, you know, like people beg and beg and beg to get there. And then if they're accepted, it's almost like an afterthought, come up with the money somehow, right, to get in. And that positioning, it makes all the difference in the world of, you know, how people are going to value the time that they get to spend with you or with one of your coaches, and, or just basically being right. included in the program, right?
Yeah. And it's, you know, and because I work with such high achieving women, there is that, you know, I'm not the coach for everyone, Ken, I promise you. If somebody does not like to be spoken to in a very direct but loving way, I'm not the coach for them. And having seen women from ages 28 to 52 make their dreams come true in spite of insane odds, I'm very direct and very confident when I can help someone and when I cannot. And I always tell, I'll be honest, because look, there's more than a few women for me to serve. If I don't believe I can help somebody, I'll be honest and direct them either to someone else or something else, because I work with women who are committed to success and I can't want it more than them. If I want it more than them, it's not a fit, because I can't show up at their house every day making sure that they're doing what they need to do. And that's why I'm also very clear on who I serve. And, you know,
guys, like what you just said there. And I think anybody who's listening who's a coach, I heard this before, but it's probably one of the most important things. If you want the result for your client more than they want it for themselves, there's going to be pain, period. I've experienced it. I've probably been on the other end of that where the coach wanted it so bad more than I did. And then I felt like he was a nagging mother, and that's not how you want to be thought of as a coach. And you just got to drop it, you know, let that line go slack. That's like kind of like a fishing term. Let them swim away and they'll come back when they feel like it, right? Or not. It doesn't matter. But if you want the result more, that by itself is a value bomb. And I think every single coach or any service provider needs to drill that through their skull. That's important. Now, I would love to keep going forever. I am running out of time. Can you share with us real quick, if somebody wants to get your book, if somebody wants to listen to the podcast or get in touch with you somehow, what is the best way? And we're going to drop the links down below.
Perfect. So a great place to start is my website. That's www.frommaybetobaby.com. You can also listen to my content for free anywhere podcasts are found. And it's the Fearlessly Fertile podcast. And I'm most active on Instagram, which is at Roseanne Austin Fertility. You'll see the pink hair and you'll know that's me. And yeah, you'll find all kinds of great stuff. And look, I know, like, and trust is really important to me. So I really encourage women, don't buy anything from me. Go listen and see if that's a fit. Because if it's not, that's cool too. And I think it's really important that women find things and basically anybody who's wanting to level up, go find somebody that jives with you. If you like the way that their energy is and you like the way they show up in the world, give them a shot.
Thank you so much for that, guys. If you're on YouTube, look at the description. If you're listening on the podcast, go to the show notes. The links are going to be there. I highly encourage you. Like this last, 45 minutes, 50 minutes has been so enjoyable for me. And I encourage you, watch the rest of her content. I am personally going to go and subscribe to all that too, because I didn't really know you until today. Now I feel like I want to get to know you more. So thank you for that. Do you have any last words of advice around content creation for somebody who's in business for themselves, maybe in the coaching industry, maybe something else, but they're not winning with content creation? What do you think you could tell them that might just kind of point them in the right direction?
Well, first of all, Ken, I really want to thank you for the honor of being on your show and all of the thoughtful questions you've posed here. It's clear that you're committed to creating your own really powerful content. So thank you for that. And for anyone starting in the business or they're finding themselves stuck in a place that they don't want to be for much longer, I really encourage people that the more you become, the better your content is going to be and the more accessible and interesting you become to the people that you will eventually serve. My hair wasn't always pink on the outside. You know, I was a pretty straight-laced prosecutor. And over time, and as I allowed myself to be more me, so did my content become that. And it's a really interesting thing. And it became more compelling. It became more clear. And I began speaking in the way that I want to speak to the women that I serve. And I began attracting exactly my ideal client. So the more you become, the easier it is for your audience to find you. So the idea that there's only one right way to do anything is a load of bullshit. Just figure out who you are. Love and trust yourself enough to put out honest and consistent content, and your people will come. And it's always that point where you're about to give up, where you're like, I've been doing this for X number of whatever, maybe I should give up. And it's like, no, The better question is, how can I be more me? And once you answer that and you have the guts to put out you content for your client, for the benefit of your client, it's I would say it's like magic, but it's not, because it's just good marketing. But that's what I would say.
That's amazing. I'd say it's like fire. You know, you might be rubbing those sticks together forever. Nothing's happening. One spark and the tinder catches, right? And I've seen that happen over and over with people.
Yeah, it just takes the first one, Ken.
Amazing. Roseanne, I will definitely be back in touch with you. I think we have some unfinished conversations that need to have some sense, because you're a very energetically attractive person, and I will be following up with you. Thank you so much for being on the show. Guys, if you enjoyed this, don't forget to drop a comment below, rate it 1 star, 5 stars. I don't care what was your honest opinion around this. And don't forget to click the links to find Roseanne Austin online in all her channels, get her book. Thank you so much, and I'll see you again next time.
You've been listening to the Content Capitalist Podcast. Conversations with million-dollar business owners about turning content into cash. We hope you've enjoyed the show, and we hope you've gotten some useful and practical information. Ken has been a video producer for 15 years and created hundreds of video marketing campaigns for high-profile CEOs. Make sure to like, rate, and review, and we'll see you soon. But in the meantime, hit the website for additional free content at contentcapitalist.com.